My name is Dan J. Gregory, and I am committed to hunting down the secrets of business mastery and human performance. My goal for the Unstoppable podcast is to share insights from some of the most successful entrepreneurs, inspiring thought leaders, world-class athletes, and prominent celebrities to help you to become unstoppable in business and life. Each week, I'll be bringing you a new interview with an inspiring person and sharing my own results as I pursue the answers to the question, how can I create the ultimate edge in my business, make a significant impact, and live an extraordinary life? Hello and welcome to episode 78 of the Unstoppable Podcast and part 3 of the Money Mindset series. I've discovered on this journey that there are so many resources for women on the topic of money mindset, but the topic seems to be somewhat overlooked and a bit of a closed book for guys. So I'm absolutely delighted to have my first male guest as part of this special money mindset series. I'm bringing you today Chris Budd, and Chris and I are going to discuss how financial well-being is not about living the life that others think you should have, but rather the life that you want. And it's a delight to have a male perspective on money. Now, before we get into this episode, let me bring you up to date with the Money Mindset series so far. The series kicked off in part one with The Art of Money with special guest Barry Tesla, where we went deep into how to create a positive relationship with money. In part two, it continued with Money, a Love Story with Kate Northrup, where we discussed how developing financial freedom begins by developing your own self-love. And we talked about some simple money practices that can help you to build a more positive relationship with money. In addition to the first two parts of the series, I shared an episode on Monday during my solo round called How to Create Your Financial Transformation, where I discussed my own research into how the wealthy think and operate differently to those who struggle financially. I shared a 5-step process for increasing your own wealth based upon these principles, and just simply going through the research myself was a transformation in itself for me. So I'm absolutely mind blown by some of the things I've shared. So be sure to check out the rest of the episodes within this series, starting with part 1 and 2 and the episode on financial transformation. One final note before I introduce you to Chris today. I launched my 30-day financial sprint earlier this week on the 1st of November to coincide with this Money Mindset series, and it's all part of my valiant attempt over the next 30 days to free myself from the historic debts that still burden me today. So I invite you to join me in stepping up and taking on your own 30-day financial sprint. And it doesn't matter whether you want to increase your income, reduce your spending, add a new income stream, start a business, or eliminate debt. Come and spend the next 30 days with me and a group of supportive people to work on achieving your own personal financial targets. To get involved, head over to danjgregory.com/November sprint. That's danjgregory.com/November sprint. All the links, as usual, will be in the show notes. Now, let me tell you a little bit about today's fascinating guest, Mr. Chris Budd. Chris Budd is a business coach, a financial planning advisor, and he runs a very well-established financial management firm in the city of Bristol, where I live, called Ovation Finance, which is a financial planning business which he started back in 2000. He is the author of Financial Wellbeing, a powerful book which shares thought-provoking insights on money, and it's all about recognizing what you want to achieve and planning how to get there. Outside of the world of finance, Chris lives with his wife and 2 children. He plays guitar and gigs regularly, and he's a published novelist with another book on the way. Chris has a firm belief that financial well-being is not about living the life that others think you should, but rather the life that you want, and his business and his life plays testament to this. During this episode, we get into the principles that have enabled Chris to build a traditional business around his desired lifestyle, as well as discussing Chris's simple, practical advice for enhanced financial well-being. Are you ready to experience more financial well-being in your life? Let's get into it. Introducing Mr. Chris Budd. Greetings, Chris. I'm absolutely delighted to have you on the Unstoppable Podcast. Just for the reference to the listeners, we're sat in a private bank facility in Bristol. I think it's a Victorian building. It's a beautiful, elegant building, very regal styling. There's a lovely chandelier hanging from the ceiling. But due to the nature of the building, we may hear some of the traffic going by. So just bear that in mind. But Chris, welcome to Unstoppable Podcast. I'm delighted to have you here.
Thank you, Dan.
So I would like to kick off really by just finding out a bit more about what you do right now, and then we'll delve into how you got to where you are right now.
Okay. What do I do right now? I spend my time making stuff up, I think, is probably the best way to describe it. I've got a theory that the main objective of anybody that runs their own small business should be to make themselves the least important person in that business.
Mm.
And my staff tell me I've been pretty successful in that. So I work really hard to get good people, to let them do their job well, to do my job better than I can do it, and so on and so forth. And that has left me free to, with an empty diary.
Mm.
And another thing that I've said often recently is that I have nothing to do, and I've never been busier.
Mm.
Because
there's
the book, the financial wellbeing book we've written, there's workshops, all sorts of stuff coming out from just being able to sit and think a bit.
Yes, wow. And that's been, for the listeners who've been following the recent episodes, that's been a big, big part of what we've been talking about, creating the space to be able to have that reflection, to have those insights.
It's not for everybody.
No.
You know, but if you're that kind of person, then it's invaluable. And in fact, it was depressing me that I wasn't having that a number of years ago.
Mm.
So, it's a good place at the moment.
Mm. So talk to me about your current business. What does it specifically do?
Ovation Finance is a financial planning company. We do three things. We do planning, helping people work out what they want from life. So I'm also a business coach. We use those skills. Once they've worked out what they want from life, we then help create a plan to get there using software, using tax planning, etc. And then we manage the investments to actually get there, see the journey through and get to the destination. But it all has to start with understanding actually where you want to be, which I suspect is a theme we're going to come back to.
Yes, it is. So let's take a bit of a walk back on your journey then. Where did your entrepreneurial journey begin?
I find that a very uncomfortable expression, entrepreneur. My entrepreneurial journey began, like many, I suspect, by being fed up with corporate life and not happy with working for idiots. How arrogant is that? My father did the same job that I do. He was a financial advisor. And back when I was in my mid-20s, I was working for a corporate. I was earning pretty good money, having a nice time. And my father, without telling anybody until it was too late, went bankrupt.
Mm.
Now, his bankruptcy informed a lot of my business thinking.
Right.
Because I went through it with him. It cost me some money helping keep the house, which was unfortunately in vain.
Mm.
And in the end, he went bankrupt. He lost everything. He lost his pride. He lost everything. And I vowed I would never be a victim of life like he was. And so that desire to take more control over my life, I guess, was the start of the journey of running my own business. So the arrogance of thinking I could do it better than everybody else, the desire for a business which wasn't based upon the sale of a product but based upon income streams,
yes,
all this kind of stuff went into the mix. And then I went out on my own in 1998 and had a terrible 2 years.
Sounds familiar. We're just talking about my journey.
Absolutely. You know, often over the years people have said, you know, I'm thinking of setting up my own business. What would your advice be? And I say, don't do it. Or at least do it very differently to how I did it. Because it was really tough.
Yes.
And I almost went bankrupt myself in those first couple of years. But slowly but surely, clients stuck with me. I did a good job, hopefully. And the business built up. And so here we are some 18 years later with a nice, solid little business.
Wow. Okay, so with your permission, I'd actually like to dive into some of those challenges, if you may. So, you know, I've obviously spoken at length to my listeners about some of the challenges I faced and the reasons why I struggled and, you know, how I could have avoided some of those struggles. So I'd be really interested to know some of the biggest challenges you faced when you first got started on your own.
There was that catch-22 situation. There was, remember, one client in the first 12 months saying, I'll see about becoming a client. I have to make sure that you're going to hang around and you'll still be here. And I said, well, I won't be here if you don't become a client. He's still with us, as it happens.
Awesome.
But that was one thing. So gaining, what would be the right word? Respect, belief, these kind of things, gravitas.
Yeah.
When you're just starting out, how do you get that? That's
absolutely
very, very difficult. So mine is a services-based company, so it might be different if you've invented something brilliant. But for something where people are buying your trust and knowledge, it takes time to build that up, and a lot of time.
Yeah,
More time than I had anticipated.
Yes. So if you could go back, would you have done anything differently to kind of build that trust and credibility? What have you learned from the experience?
I think I would have just given myself an easier ride, maybe.
Mm.
Not put so much pressure on myself.
Yeah.
One of the things that I'd like to talk about is what success is.
Yes.
And I think the thing that I've learned over that period is it's really important to understand what success looks like for you.
Yes.
For you personally.
Absolutely.
And at the time, I probably, what was I, 28, 29, I probably thought of success in financial terms.
Yeah.
Now I don't.
Mm.
Success is different for everybody. For me, it's about flexibility of time.
Yes.
That's what success looks like. I am impressed with somebody who can choose what they do on a Tuesday.
Absolutely. You know? Yeah, yeah.
That's what, and I don't care how much money they've got. They could be, have no money whatsoever. They just don't, I'm almost more impressed by that.
Yes, yeah.
Flexibility of time, understanding yourself. These are the things that I think are important.
Yes.
Back then, I thought it was more financial. Mm. And that's understandable because you need to buy things, you need to pay for things. But now, having got this degree of financial success, and I'm no means wealthy, but I do now realise that it's that flexibility of time that's important to me.
Mm, that's really fascinating because Kate, who was on last week in part two of the Money Mindset series, she was talking about, to her, the ultimate luxury in life is choice and that ability to make choice. You know, there are physical luxuries in the world that we can all ponder after if we wish, or we can have that choice.
Yeah.
And what was interesting as she was speaking, you know, part of the reason that Chris and I got together is because I wanted to find a masculine voice, because what Kate was saying was that typically the male driver is, they associate their self-worth with their net worth.
That's a great phrase. I listened to the podcast. That's a great phrase. I'm nicking that one.
You take that. But it was really about that pursuit for money, and that was the number one driver. But it's what I found, you know, when I first started my business, that was my number one drive. And interestingly enough, the more I focused on money, the more I chased it away. And it was similar during my 20s when I was, you know, dating women. The more I pursued them, the more they would run away. So there's a lesson to be learned from that.
And in the in our business, Innovation, 92% of our income comes from our existing clients.
Nice.
We don't really do marketing. There's a little bit with the book and a few other bits and pieces, but what I've learned over the years is the best form of marketing is doing a good job.
Yes. Yes.
Because clients come back, they stay with you, they're loyal, and they recommend other people to them. So don't go chasing and spending all your money on big marketing budgets. Just spend all your money and time and effort on doing the best job you possibly can for your client. And that will be its own marketing.
Mm. So when you went from that period of struggle and challenge at the beginning, was there a defining moment that changed it for you?
Yeah, there was a few. There was the day I had to have dry toast for my lunch because I couldn't afford to go down to the shop and
I've been there.
Yeah,
I've done that.
My credit card was maxed out. My wife didn't know about it because I was making the same mistakes my dad made.
Yep.
Pride getting in the way, you know. So that was one. There was a day where I was driving to London knowing that if the guy I was going to see didn't sign that piece of paper, it was all over.
Yes.
You know, in fact, on my website, I have a blog called MD Bingo, where you have to write down 10 things that you've done to truly call yourself a business owner.
Nice.
Working on Christmas Day.
Yes.
Telling a member of staff that they smell. So, yeah, I've done all those. I've got the scars. And they did leave scars, too.
Mm.
I'm not no kidding. You know, again, when people say, any tips on setting up my own business, and I say don't. I'm not joking.
Yes.
It really is tough.
Yes.
And now it's hugely rewarding because it was tough.
Mm.
But it's a bit like when somebody has a baby, you know. And when you've had kids, you know, it's really hard work.
Yes.
But you don't want to spoil their fun.
No, you're right. Well, so in this kind of defining moments, what decisions did you make that helped you move forward in terms of creating your business now as it is today?
I would say sticking to my principles was a big one.
Mm.
Because I had a belief that I wanted a financial planning firm that charged time rather than sold products for commission. And back in those days, I was quite literally laughed at by colleagues. Charging, I think this is my biggest secret actually, charging £25 a month.
Mm.
As a retainer fee.
Yeah.
Now, in my business, that was, and still is, pretty unusual.
Yeah.
But it meant that when somebody wanted something, they came back to me.
Mm.
And now we've spent a long time building up a proposition which people get something for their money on an ongoing basis without coming to us.
Yes.
It's a club. We're a gang.
Nice.
You know? And actually sticking to that and recognising the value of that in the early days, when a couple of big cases came along and colleagues of mine took the high commissions, I'll just take commission on this one. No. You've got to stick to your principles.
Yes.
And that meant that my business took probably 18 months longer to get going than it could have otherwise have done. But I'm very glad I did now, because 92% of our income comes from those.
Absolutely. One of the first principles of the Unstoppable Entrepreneur is disregard conventional thinking.
Yeah.
You know, do things your way.
Do what's right.
And do what's right for you, actually. So I'm interested in the principle piece. How did you identify your principles? Because that's a piece in itself.
Well, they were, in some ways, I vowed to run a business. I learned everything about my business principles from my father, because I vowed to do everything he didn't.
Yeah, okay.
He died last year, and I never told him that. Because I don't think, it's not a very nice message to get. But actually, he influenced me hugely, because I needed to do all the things that he didn't do, because he went bankrupt, and I wasn't going to do that.
Yes, wow, okay, cool. So I want to talk a little bit about money then. Obviously, you specialize in helping clients manage their money, and a lot of the discussions we've been having over the last couple of episodes on the Unstoppable podcast about money mindset. What do you believe, we've talked about principles here today, what are some of the principles you believe that people need to consider when it comes to their own relationship with money?
The first principle I would suggest is to stop talking about money. Stop talking about investments, stop talking about tax planning. Nobody cares about investments, truthfully.
Yeah.
You know, when we go and see our clients, for many, many years, I'd sit in front of them with a review of their investment portfolio. I'd go through each area, each fund, asset allocation to have this guy, and they'd just glaze over. The only bit they cared about was, how close am I to doing the things in life I want to do?
Yes.
And that's what matters.
The objective.
Objective. We talked about success earlier on. How will you know that you're successful? How will you know when the moment has come that you've achieved what you want to achieve? I see so many people, a lot of our clients are business owners, and so many of them have just head down working hard and actually have no idea why they're working. They just know somehow they've got to be working hard and making money.
Yep.
To what end? Yep. And that's the focus. That's the first principle I would suggest. If I can just illustrate with a quick story, I've met two chaps, business coaching clients, and they were running a very successful business, and they were starting their business plan to sell this business for £6 million in 5 years' time. That was the number. £3 million each, right? A lot of money. And so, next question I asked was, can I ask this number of 6 million, where does that come from? So they shuffled on the floor a little bit. And, one of them explained that he had three kids, and the eldest one was 8, and they wanted to emigrate to Australia, he and his wife. And the 8-year-old would be 13, which wasn't ideal. 11 would have been a better time, but that's the 5-year plan, you know. And I asked the other guy, 3 million, you know, what does that know? And he struggled to, in reinvesting, and I need. And I just kept prodding on where this number comes from. And eventually, after about 10 minutes, they had to admit that the number of 3 million came because that's what one of their mates had got for his business.
Right. Wow.
And I suggested that maybe if you sold for 2 million in 3 years' time, would that be enough?
Yes.
But one of the guys, that means your kid can go to school in Australia at 11 at the right time. You know, so that's actually the question. How much is enough? Financial planning is really very, very simple. Work out what you want from life, spend your money on that.
Yeah.
That's it, really. The trouble is, working out what you want from life is the difficult
thing. That's the challenging.
And that's what people don't do enough of, in my view.
Yes.
And that's what we try and get our clients to do, to think about life, think what they want to do. Somebody says, I want to retire at 65. Two questions. Where does the number 65 come from? But secondly, 65 in a day, you wake up, what were you going to do?
Yes.
What will it look like?
What will life look like? Yeah, what will you do? Yeah. What will you experience? Yeah. Okay, cool. So we've talked a little about debt. You know, I shared my story before we recorded this interview about debt and kind of the shame around money. What in terms of your experience working with people who've got debt, what are some of the important principles to consider when you're in a position of debt in terms of eliminating the debt?
Surveys have shown that people tend to pay off the smallest debt first, because I guess there's an emotional response to that. Where in actual fact, what you should be paying off is, of course, the debt with the highest interest rate.
Yes.
So one of the things, we do a workshop for employees around financial well-being, and one of the things that we get them to do is to write down all their debts, write down the amounts, the monthly payments, and the interest rate, and make sure they focus the maximum repayment on the highest interest rate.
Yeah.
A lot of the financial well-being stuff you see at the moment is focused on debt, and I'm absolutely all for that. It's very important. However, I also think that there's not enough talk about the more positive things that you can do with
money. Yes.
Working out your... So there's a process to go through. First of all, work out your disposable income, which means you need to work out your subsistence income first. So go into your bank accounts, get a glass of wine out, get your bank statements, go through them. Boring as hell, right? But the benefit you get from this, there are apps that can do this for you these days as well, on trees, and I think Money Dashboard do this for you.
Yes.
Go through your bank statements and be honest with yourself. That money I spent on that, is that making me happy? Okay? And some of it will be.
Yes.
Some of it, if you're honest with yourself, probably won't be. So you'll end up with a number of how much money I need to live on to, for a happy life.
Yes.
So it involves holidays, it includes bacon, it includes wine, the important stuff, you know. Your happy life costs that much. That means anything else you went over that is to disposable income. That's spare. So the next step is to say, how can I spend that money to make me happier?
Yes.
And it could be that you... art, for example. It could be something physical. It could be... the well-being you get from physical is quite short-lived. Better to spend that on experiences, because that gives memories which is much longer-lasting.
Yes.
Or it could be spending it on bringing your future closer. Which is the best line for pensions and savings you'll ever hear. Bringing your future closer. But it's true. If you've worked out what you want from life...
Yep.
Actually, then, spending a bit of money on saying, well, I'd like to be able to stop working 10 years' time. If I do this, I could stop working 8 years' time. What incentive?
Absolutely.
Or I can leave my company and set up my own business.
Yes.
What it, because don't start your business with debt. Isn't that right, Dan?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
I was the same as you. I started my business when I had some debt.
Yeah.
Have some business when you've got some money in the bank.
Mm.
So bringing those future things forward is a really good incentive for a good way of spending that disposable income. Not only that, but having gone round that whole process, go back and start again that subsistence income, because now you've seen what the prize is.
Yes.
You might be a bit harsher on that bank statement.
Yeah.
So that's a much more positive thing that you can do. And not saying that you shouldn't be paid debt, of course one should.
Yes.
But you should also spend your money to make you happy as well, as well as alleviate the sadness.
Absolutely. And you know, coming from a financial services world, debt certainly has very positive uses. The context of this discussion is really around when it comes to the point where it becomes a burden upon you and the emotional side. So what are your experiences in terms of dealing with the emotional side of money?
Crikey, that's all we do, really. And if people don't want to engage with the emotional side of money, they don't tend to come to answer us. Go and buy a product online, that's fine.
Yeah.
You know, we get clients to think about what life is about, what they want it to be. The emotional side of money is everything, except it's not the emotional side of money, because money is the engine. So we try to get people to think about life rather than money. So I'm thinking through my answers as I'm talking here, Dan, as you can tell. The emotional side of money is to not think about money. It's to focus on what you want life to be, what you want your destination to be. There's a, you know, the Chinese proverb that every long journey starts with a small step.
Yes.
The question is, in which direction? And the money is then the way that you get there.
Yes.
But don't focus on your money and get emotional about it. Focus on your life and what you want your life to look like, and then the money will seem less emotional.
Absolutely. And here's the other thing as well. You know, a lot of discussions had, certainly over the last two episodes, is about confronting as well some of the wounds from the past. Because, you know, you said the relationship with your father influenced your principles. That conversation comes up time and time again, not only just on this mindset, the money mindset piece, but every entrepreneur I've interviewed, pretty much, and we discussed this with Kate as well, the relationship that we have with our family early on significantly impacts the direction that we take in our life. And, you know, Kate shared intricately how it inhibited her progress previously until she managed that relationship, was able to heal that relationship, so then she was able to move forward. So we've talked a lot about moving forward and finding the clarity about who we are and where we want to go and the things we want in our life. What about when we're looking introspectively and looking back? How can we, what's your experience of looking at, you know, healing some of those money wounds effectively from relationships from the past or emotions you've got towards money from the past?
The word I would use to summarize that would be permission. Permission is a fascinating area and not hugely researched, actually. I'll give you a quick story, two quick stories. About 7 years ago, I had what my doctor called depression or stress. I think it was latent stress and depression from those early days of the business.
Yes.
Incidentally, the GP, my local doctor, sent me home with a tachyal questionnaire entitled Depression Questionnaire, for me to fill it in and come back 2 weeks later.
Right.
The first question of which was, how often each week do you feel like killing yourself?
Right.
So I realised that conventional medicine wasn't going to be able to help me. By coincidence, I had a friend who was training to be a business coach, and she asked me if I would be a guinea pig. I thought business coaching was a load of old voodoo, but I went along with it. And those three sessions changed my life.
Amazing.
Genuinely changed my life, because I realised that the thing that was really causing me stress and depression at this point in my life was not writing novels.
Mm.
Because I'd written a lot as a younger man, I'd got out of the habit, the business had taken all my energy, and I didn't have the fresh mental energy, which is a great phrase one of our clients once used, to be able to write. So from that week, after three sessions, we decided I would take Wednesdays off. So I haven't worked at Ovation on a Wednesday for about 7 years.
Nice.
My muzzy head, which was a symptom of the depression, went 6 months later. 3 years later, I published my first novel, still available on Amazon.
Nice. But
the next one will be out in December, so I just finished the second one. I'm working on the third, and I still do that on Wednesdays. And that gives me huge well-being.
Yes.
And that's because somebody stopped me and made me think about what my life should be like.
Yeah.
In going through that process, I realised that what was stopping me was permission.
Mm.
I needed three people's permission.
Mm.
I needed permission from my wife, who looked at me with a funny face and said, yeah, obviously, get on with it. Once I'd actually bothered to ask the question.
You know? Yeah.
The second person was me.
Yes.
I gave myself a similar response through that coaching process. And the third one was my staff.
Mm.
Because I was really worried that they were going to feel let down by their leader, so to speak. And I spoke to Vicky, who's worked for Ovation for 15 years now, and I asked her, look, I'm thinking of taking one day a week out, what do you think? And she said, well, everybody else does.
Yeah.
Everybody else is part-time, it's true. Everybody else has some flexibility with that. The only person I hadn't allowed was myself.
Yes.
So permission was huge in allowing me to be happy. Permission to do something for myself.
Mm.
The other quick story I'll give is a client who we really struggled to get to spend money on herself. This is very common, particularly for the older generation, to be spending the money that they have accumulated.
Mm.
We spend a lot of time trying to help people to spend their money to be happy.
Yes.
And this particular lady, who was early 60s, 64, something like that, quite wealthy, worked hard, no kids. That helps you get wealthy. That's a good tip. But not spending the money. So we had her in a meeting room and with her partner, and we said, what would you like to do? What would make you happy? I'm quite happy. But you could be happy. What else could you spend the money on that you would enjoy? And she eventually admitted that she didn't want to spend her money because her dad wouldn't like it. Her dad had been dead 20 years.
Wow. Wow.
Now, we said to her, this is a wonderful moment, they both played golf, so we said, tell you what about Ryder Cup?
Mm.
How about tickets to the next Ryder Cup? So she sat in our office in Bristol and she said, go on then, go and see how much it would cost. I've got my mobile phone. I've got a guy who can organise tickets. And I'm just about to speak to him and I say, so you're happy, Ryder Cup tickets, VIP, I'll see what we can get. She said, yeah, in America.
Hey. Nice.
And that was a wonderful moment that she'd finally broken the shackles.
The door is open.
Dad would allow it.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah. But it's interesting, again, as we were saying, it's that those relationships that we have with our parents or our family or our upbringing have significant impact on how we live our life. You know, I've just done a two series workshops with my clients here in Bristol, and it's been all about identifying what those patterns are, because we all carry stories with us. I said it's lies disguised as the truth about who we are and what we're supposed to do and what's holding us back. And often the stories we tell ourselves about money, I find, is what hold us back from creating the things that we want in life. And I really love the fact that you've associated, actually, money is about what will it bring you, what direction, and how can it bring your future closer. I really like that line, so I might pinch that one as well. So you talk about novels, but I want to talk about your financial book. Could you tell us a little bit, Chris, about your book that you've released on financial wellbeing?
Okay, so my wife works is a cancer nurse in the NHS. And one day a week, she worked at this amazing place just out of Bristol called the Penny Bron Cancer Centre.
Mm. I'm familiar with it, yeah.
The work they do there is all around supporting conventional medicine. So this isn't against conventional medicine, it's supporting.
Yes.
The idea is that we all have cells in us, which this is my understanding of it. So if anybody says that I've got my facts wrong here, please, this is my fault, not theirs. we all have within our cells that are cancerous, and we have good cells, and the good cells kill the cancerous
yes,
cells.
Yes.
When the cancerous cells take over and form a tumour, form cancer, the conventional medicine goes and zaps the cancerous cells.
Mm.
What Penny Braun do is they say, well, how can we help support the good cells?
Yes, yeah.
So our body can help support the efforts to fight the cancer. And so it's things like mindfulness about healthy eating, lack of stress.
Mm.
So when my wife was telling me about this in great excitement and enthusiasm a few years ago, lack of stress is one of the things. And I thought, well, what's one of the biggest causes of stress? Worries about money.
Absolutely.
So I said, great, why don't I write a book called How Financial Planning Can Help Prevent Cancer?
Nice.
And she looked at me and no, that's not a good idea. But it did create the idea that then became
the
financial well-being book.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
So the idea is to reduce stress, reduce worry by getting control of your money.
Okay.
And so it's a very practical book. It's I profess to be one of the greatest owners of unread business books in the country.
Shelf development.
Yeah. Well, a lot of business books I like the idea of, but then I open them, they're 80,000 words long and there's no pictures. Oh, God.
Yeah.
So this is, it's got pictures, it's got space to write notes, it's very action-driven.
Awesome.
It takes you through a process of working out what you want from life, creating a financial plan, spending money on experiences, that kind of stuff. A little bit of education, well, a fair amount of education, really, but it's logical stuff.
Mm.
Nobody cares about what a pension is. Nobody cares about asset versus passive management. It's not interesting.
Yep.
What they care about is how can I challenge my own self-limiting beliefs in order to create more options in life.
Absolutely.
That's the interesting
stuff. Yes, it is. Yes, it is.
So the book takes you through those principles. We also do podcasts, financial wellbeing podcasts, where we explore the same stuff. We do workshops. And actually, this is not what you expect a financial advisor to be doing.
Absolutely. It's the right thing to be doing, I believe.
It's great fun.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's actually opening loads of doors of people who are coming along and saying, it's really refreshing to have somebody talking about the positive things that you can do to improve your relationship with money.
Yes, yes. So in your, obviously, you're right. I mean, stress is one of the biggest contributors to stress is financial challenges. So could you share an experience in your life where you've experienced stress when it comes to money and how you've conquered that, and perhaps some of the principles from the book that people can take away and implement in their lives?
Yeah, the book's got loads of stories because over the years we've obviously picked up lots of anecdotes about people in this space. For my own life, I think probably I'm quite enjoying not buying stuff.
Yes.
That sounds a really odd thing to say, but I wouldn't say, like I said, I'm not wealthy, but there's not a lot in life that I really want.
Mm.
I love music.
Yeah.
I love cricket.
Yes. Yeah.
Along with my family, they're my three passions, and so if I can combine those in some way.
Yes.
So the really big pleasures are taking my teenage kids to watch a test match.
Yes.
Spending time with them. Well-being comes from social relationships far more than it does from having money.
Absolutely.
You know, loads and loads of studies have shown that.
Absolutely.
So spending money. So we go into town and go into the shops, and I now stand there and I go, actually, I don't really want to buy anything.
Mm. Mm.
My Amazon bill is still quite high because of the CD I buy. But that dates me, doesn't it? I still buy CDs.
Yeah.
But I actually, that's a nice shirt. I've got eight. I don't need another one.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, yeah.
So actually, I've got to the stage in life where I'm just enjoying not spending money.
Mm.
And that has given me happiness because I come back with money in my pocket.
Yes.
And I don't get stressed because I've got into debt.
And when you do spend it, you spend it on the things you really want.
Absolutely. And I've thought a lot about what I really want.
Mm, that's the important piece.
Quick story. When I was in my late teens, I did a bit of travelling, gap year, and I spent time with books in Israel. And I met a guy who became my bestest friend for a few years, Danish chap called Jakob. We share the same birth date. He spent a few summers over here. I spent a summer in Denmark. And then over the years, we lost contact. About 4 years ago, through the power of Facebook, we found each other again. And he's always been rubbish at writing letters. So a bit of communication. Back in March, I took the family over to Copenhagen to visit him. And his daughters, and we had the most wonderful weekend.
Nice.
It was like no time had passed, you know. I'm just so happy that Jakob and I are back in contact again. I've got nothing physical to show for that.
Yes, yes.
But I got great happiness because my family and I had a wonderful weekend in Copenhagen. They've got great memories. And I've got my old mate back. You know, that's a way to spend money to alleviate stress.
Awesome. It's interesting, through the whole conversation, it seems that you're really clear about what your definition of success is. But there's a couple of times during the interview you said, I'm not wealthy by any stretch of the imagination. But to me, it sounds that you are wealthy. You're wealthy in the experiences that you want to create.
Amen to that. Yeah, absolutely.
So, you know, absolutely. I'm a firm believer that wealth doesn't necessarily have to have a financial component.
No.
You know, wealth is having your ideal partner. Wealth is having the life that you want to live. It's wealth is having the experiences you want to create. So many things. And again, this for me is about, again, this comes up with some of the points that have come up over the previous weeks, is we attach wealth to material things. It's been the American way and the British way. And I'm not blaming on America. It's the corporate way. And it's fine to want things if that's what you truly want. But the key is to understand what you truly want. You know, when it comes to my own material desires, I like the big stuff. I do like cars, and I can see the type of house I want to live in. But outside of that, it's all about experiences. It's all about experiences and the connections and the meaningful connections and the relationships that I have with people, because that what brings me the ultimate joy in life.
Yeah, we had a client come to see us recently, and he was moving into a third phase of life, a kind of semi-retirement consultancy. He had a bit of money, and we asked what his plans were. And he said that he wanted to buy a flat in London.
Mm.
He loved going to London, and he wanted to start collecting art. So I asked, what does that give you? Well, I got a flat in London, I can go and spend some time in London. If I got art, I can look at the beautiful art that's on the wall, can't I? Yeah. And after a bit of a conversation, we suggested that perhaps rather than buy the flat in London, he'd go and stay in a hotel.
Yeah, yeah.
Because that would cost him 200 quid a night rather than £300,000-£400,000.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Rather than collecting art, which meant he could only look at the same picture each time,
he'd
go to different art galleries. So rather than spending the money on acquiring things, spend the money on travelling not only to London, but maybe other countries.
Mm.
Go to the Salvador Dali Museum in Barcelona. Go to all around the world looking at art, and you can get different cities. And he completely got it. But look, if somebody decides after a long process of careful thought that what they want to do is buy a huge yacht...
Yes.
Fine.
Absolutely.
I'm not saying that's wrong.
Yes.
I'm just saying that what you need to do is work out what you want from life and spend your money on that.
Absolutely. And I think the key thing is there, and that's really interesting because, you know, I talked about at the start when I started my business, I was kind of chasing the money. And I had friends who said, oh, all you care about is money. And that hit me because I knew that wasn't the truth. That was not the truth.
But they were saying it for a reason.
They were saying it for a reason, perhaps, because that's what I was talking about. You know, I was talking about my objectives. And, you know, that was a lesson in myself. You know, that comes from the pursuing the money and not getting it. And when I switched it to making a contribution and making a difference, all of a sudden my business changed. Of course, I still had financial objectives. But the reason I tell this story is because a lot of people through their upbringing have developed negative associations, not only to money, but also to things. You know, if you've, like me and my family, you know, we were always taught that, you know, we didn't need to have things, which is fine. But I developed a negative association. So if I wanted to buy a nice car, there was this feeling of guilt inside me for the desire to have that. And I had to explore into that because, and I've come across this with many people, is that, again, if you really want that, you should not feel guilty about having that. And it also comes down to, I remember when I was a student walking down the street and this guy pulled up in his Ferrari, beautiful looking car. And my friend said, what a bastard. You know, I had a negative reaction to the guy in the car. And I thought, I'd love to learn how that guy got that car. You know, and my friend said he's probably a drug dealer or something. I'm like, what kind of mindset is that? So I'm really keen to understand the value of money and the value placed on things. Why do we have negative connotations if it is something we truly want?
I think it depends what the thing is.
Mm.
It's funny that if you buy a Ferrari, are you buying it because you really love cars, and Ferrari is the epitome of the item that you love.
Mm.
So for me with guitars,
yes,
my company's called Ovation because I play an Ovation guitar.
Nice.
And I play that Ovation guitar because my guitar hero was a female singer called Joan Armatrade, a bit before your time.
Yeah.
Brilliant guitarist. And I got the best Ovation I could possibly afford back in my mid-20s.
Awesome.
Now, nobody knows that that's a really expensive guitar.
Yes.
It doesn't look expensive.
Yes.
But it was.
Mm-hmm.
I bought it, an expensive item, because it was the best quality of the thing that I like.
Yes.
Yeah. If you buy a car, what's the best quality car that you could buy? I don't know. I don't know anything about cars.
Yes.
is it the flashiest car,
mm.
or is it the car that just happens to be the nicest to drive? So
yes.
if somebody's driving that Ferrari, for me, as a bit of an ignoramus on cars, yes. is screaming, look at me, I'm rich.
Yes, yeah, yeah.
It's not, I love my car, it's look at me, I'm rich. And that's why you think he's a bit of a tosser.
Yes, yeah, yeah, yeah.
But that's his call, not mine.
And absolutely, and it's how he thinks about his car. Because if he is the guy that thinks, if his car to him is his Ovation guitar, that for me is a beautiful thing. That, and, you know, people have a natural drive for significance, and some people get that by being showy, deliberately showy. And I don't think that's a pure emotion. I don't think that's, you know, once we learn, when we're behaving that way, I think you can make some real changes in your life if you are operating from the place of look at me. You know, external validation is never the way to fulfillment in life. But the thing I want is, I won't get the listeners to get on this, is that I develop guilt around wanting the car because I know there's other people who associate that significance that we were just talking about to the driver of the car. So that I felt guilty because I didn't want to be seen as that guy, even though that was not who I am. For me, you know, there's two Ferraris I have in my head, which to me are my Ovation guitar, and I would have them for the sheer beauty of the car. And I wouldn't give a damn if anyone even looked at the car. For me, it would be my magic moment to have that car, and also to reward myself for the time in the trenches that I put in to create the financial return to be able to do that. So
with you sitting in that car, your emotion is entirely down to you, not down to others.
Exactly.
And that's fine. If somebody yes. wants to drive a Ferrari because I've worked hard, I can afford it, and it's just a beautiful thing to drive, cool.
Yes.
I'm not going to judge that.
Yes.
And if I do judge it, you shouldn't care.
Yeah, exactly. That's the piece. That's the piece for me. You know.
But if you look at the media, if you look at advertising, we have a lot of pressure on us to be rich.
We do, yeah.
Wolf of Wall Street, for example.
Yeah.
The Apprentice.
Yes.
Dragon's Den. I don't know if they've had Dragon's Den in the US, but...
Something similar.
For money.
Shark Tank, I think they call it.
So Shark Tank. They're all about money.
Mm.
They're all about a definition of success as being rich.
Yes.
So we have this pressure put on us. For all my life, when I watched telly, I had the remote control, right, virtually sellotaped to my hand, so that the second the adverts come off, the mute button gets hit.
Yeah, right? Yeah, yeah.
Because advertising, my view is, tries to make us feel that we need something
yes.
in order that they can give it to us.
Yes.
It makes us feel sad that we don't have
absolutely.
That item
yes.
in order that we will then go out and buy it.
Yes.
I'm so obsessed with this that when we go to the cinema,
yeah.
my kids will go in and watch the trailers and the adverts. I'll sit outside reading
yeah.
a book
yeah.
and they'll text me when the film's about to start.
Amazing.
I'll only go in then.
Amazing.
I will do anything to avoid advertising. There's so much pressure on us to be rich
yes.
and to judge richness and mm. wealth as being the definition of success. And I've just decided to step out of that. Really.
Yes, yes.
And that's a decision you can make.
Absolutely, absolutely. No, I respect that as well. That's and again, it comes back to what you want. What do you actually want?
That's... Work out what you want from life.
Yes.
Spend your money on that.
Awesome. So what are some of the biggest lessons that the book will teach if people were to get hold of the book?
There's five different areas. The creating the plan, getting control of your finances. That is a big one.
Mm.
Debt management, etc. Having options in life, financial options, which is a really interesting area. Having clarity for those that we leave behind, and also getting having a clear path to identify your objectives. Sorry, lost my track there.
Yeah.
So they are the core areas. I just lost my track. So I was thinking about those financial options because it goes back to what we were saying earlier. There's two ways of getting financial options. Firstly, you can get more money.
Mm. Mm.
That's true. You
yes.
know. To say that money doesn't get you happiness is ridiculous. You speak to somebody who gets a bonus that means they can go on holiday, they're happier.
Yes, exactly.
But there comes a point in time where more money doesn't make you more happy.
Yes.
So giving Bill Gates an extra tenner isn't going to make him happy, you know.
Yeah.
Somewhere in between lies your tipping point, and that's what you need to find.
Yeah.
So you can get more money, that gets you more options, or alternatively, what you can also do is you can change what you do in life. You can mm. understand yourself better to match the amount of money you have.
Yes.
And somewhere in between, that those two meet, and boom, that's where you've got mm. your financial plan and your happiness mm. and your well-being.
That's useful to know. And also, the way I look at kind of financial future for myself is I look at it in circles. So I see my own circle in terms of what is it that I truly want to bring into my life. And then the next circle is who's most important to me and what do they want and how can I help them get what they want.
Spending money on others is a great way to spend that disposable income for well-being. Absolutely. I go back to my Copenhagen story. You know, that was a really good way of spending money. One of our clients, who I know very well, sadly has a terminal illness, and he was given 6 months to live 18 months ago.
Yeah.
And he's spending a lot of time with his family, with his daughters, which is giving him well-being, which is keeping him going.
Absolutely.
And I spoke to him the other day, and he was a bit down. He loves his music. So I went on to Amazon, and there's one of the best bands around at the moment, in my view, is a band called Sweet Billy Pilgrim. Give them a quick plug.
Nice, check them out.
Their latest album, Motorcycle Amnesiacs, is absolutely brilliant. So I sent that to him in the post.
Nice.
That cost me a tenner.
Yes.
But he got an unexpected item in the post. He opened it up, and it was a really good album. He sat there listening to music.
Lovely.
What a great way to increase well-being.
Absolutely. Yeah, and then I even think the next circle outside of that, so who's in my inner circle, but then who's outside of my circle. You know, I have an innate desire. I need to explore where the desire comes from. I don't know, but I have an innate desire to help beyond myself and beyond my immediate loved ones. You know, I want to make a difference. And so, for the extra £10 to Bill Gates, the reason this came up is I thought, actually, to someone like Bill Gates, who's committed to giving almost all of his wealth to the future of mankind, I'm thinking, well, the extra tenner could actually help, because every pound that can help some make a difference in this world, I believe, actually is worthwhile. But to his personal circle, it means nothing.
Yeah, that's very true.
But when you look at the outer circle in terms of what's possible, and that for me is why I needed to adapt my own money mindset, because I was thinking of myself rather than who's outside of me in my immediate circle, then who's even beyond that. And it doesn't come with any pressure. You know, there's no obligation for me to do that, but it is an innate desire for me to go beyond myself and beyond my immediate circle to contribute wider than my middle circle. So I had to really go to work on myself to make sure that my association with money was positive enough that I found everything I needed. But then beyond that, how can I expand my own capabilities to earn so that I can then make a difference beyond myself and my inner circle into that outer circle and beyond?
Mm-hmm. Can I be arrogant enough to give you a word of advice, Dan?
You sure can.
You're an intense young man.
I am.
very bright. You're trying to work out the world, and I absolutely applaud you for it. However, there is also sometimes when you need to adopt a line from a Van Morrison song.
Okay.
It ain't why, it just is.
Yes.
And sometimes if something gives you happiness, it gives you happiness.
Absolutely.
And that's okay.
Yeah.
Don't analyze it, just go with it.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, one of my favorite podcasts to give plugs is the 10X podcast by Joe Polish and Dan Sullivan. Dan Sullivan was saying, we spend all of our life trying to find meaning, but sometimes you just need to accept that it is.
Yeah.
That's what it is. Don't try it. You know, because a lot of in the personal development world, in the world I'm in, everyone's always talking about find your why. And that does get you a certain way. You know, so when it comes to, you know, getting out of debt or building a business and finding the things you're really clear on, when you're clear on what you want, then, you know, you know why you want them, because you want them. You don't need to look for anything more deep than that. So I love that point. You know, it just is, because if you've identified what you want, well, don't struggle for the next year trying to figure out why you want it. You just accept that you do and go for
Absolutely.
It.
Absolutely. If it becomes something that's unattainable, maybe then it needs a little bit of thought.
But yes.
Actually, if you've done this properly, if you've and incidentally, I do strongly believe it's not possible to challenge yourself.
Mm.
I do strongly believe that if you want help, I mean, look, my story. I wasn't challenging my own assumptions. Mm. Only when a business coach came along unexpectedly, yes, at the end of those three sessions did I realise a whole lot of things, because somebody else had challenged me. You
Absolutely.
Can't challenge yourself. So talk to a friend, talk to the other half if there is one. Even better, engage somebody, a coach, to help you professionally go through the process. If you've done all of that and at the end of it you've got a few things, firstly, I bet they don't cost as much as you thought you did.
Yes.
They would at the beginning.
Yep.
And secondly, just accept that and then do it.
Awesome. I love that. And yeah, the coach piece is so important. I think human beings, I call it the warp. We kind of just live in this tunnel vision. You know, we're very sophisticated creatures, but we're very simple creatures as well. We kind of just live in this autopilot, and it takes someone else outside of us to ask the question. And I genuinely believe it's very difficult to ask the question and answer the question in the same thought.
You can't challenge yourself.
Yeah, you need something outside of you. And if you can't find anyone else, just write it down and answer the question. Don't try and think of the question and the answer at the same time. But, you know, find a coach, mentor, someone who can support you. So, Chris, I want to wrap up. So there's a couple of questions I ask all my guests. The first one is, if you think about a younger version of yourself, what advice would you give to your younger self from the place where you are now?
Chill out.
Nice.
That's easy to say, though, because I now know what the ending is.
Yes.
And when I was that age, I always used to think to myself, if only somebody could tell me that I was going to be okay. Mm. Not rich,
yeah,
but not bankrupt.
Yes.
At least that I'm going to be okay,
yeah,
then I could just relax a bit, you know.
Mm.
But that's rubbish advice, because you can't do it. You can't see the future. So I just keep going, really. You know, I really had a passion, a belief, and a vision,
mm,
and it was different from what everybody else was doing. Now, sometimes things are different because they're wrong.
Yes. Yes.
Sometimes you do it differently because you've got a better idea than everybody else.
Mm.
The wisdom to tell the difference between those two,
yeah,
is probably the biggest trick. And again, that probably should have come from somebody else. So that's a roundabout way of saying I should have probably listened to my dad a bit more.
Yeah, okay. And let's flip that equation as well. So what would your younger self now say about you today?
I think he would be impressed, I think.
Cool.
I think he might be surprised, but after taking a bit of time, he might go, yeah, actually, because I always had that in me, you know,
yeah,
the belief of what was right. It just took a long time to turn that into a plan,
yeah,
and turn that into something meaningful. You know, I don't know who the hell I am yet,
yeah,
and I hope I never do. You know, that's why I'm writing novels. It's fun working,
yes,
out life.
Yes.
You know,
yes.
And I wouldn't want the answer to life, because then it would be a bit boring, wouldn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. And now the next question is, you talked about your bookshelf of business books.
Yeah.
What's been the most inspirational or influential book that you've read?
Now, that's an easy one to answer, because when I was, just before I set my business up,
mm,
about a year and a half, I was working in London for a big corporate. It was a pretty unpleasant office that I was working in. There was a couple of people there who were nasty people.
Mm.
Sales organisation, with a sales manager who wasn't a very nice individual. And I was drinking too much, and I wasn't happy at all. And I read a book called The Long Walk by a guy called Slawomir Rawicz.
Cool.
And it's a true story of a Polish war officer who gets sent to a Russian concentration camp. I'm giving nothing away by saying he escapes and walks for freedom, because A, it's called The Long Walk, and B, he wrote it. So
yes,
I'm not making any spoilers, but it's, as ever, the journey.
Yes.
And it's a true story. And I ended up on the train station in Rains Park, where I was living at the time, finishing the book in floods of tears.
Yes.
No kidding.
Wow.
Slightly embarrassing, but that's never been a huge issue,
yeah,
for me.
Yeah.
So, and I just sat there and I thought, if he could do that,
mm,
why am I going to work doing a job that I don't like?
Yes.
And it took me 18 months, 2 years to get there, but that was the beginning of the journey where I am now,
mm,
reading that book and realised, you know what, stop whinging about it and do something about it.
Nice, nice. And then the final question I ask every single guest is, what does it mean to be unstoppable to you?
I'm going to be a bit controversial on this, actually.
Go for it. This is all about your answer.
There's a very clever young man who works in my company. He's our marketing apprentice, Tom Dewey. He's also a poet, a very talented poet. And he heard me talking about this unstoppable concept.
Yes.
And he said a great line. He said, the only time you are really unstoppable is when you're standing still.
Hmm. Mm.
And I thought that pretty much encapsulates my approach to it, really. Stand still every once in a while and look around.
Yes, so important. Well, thank you, Chris. The final question, the most important question, is for the listeners today, if they want to find out more about your work and who you are and what you do, where should they go to find more about your work?
Come and say hi on Twitter. I'm at Ovation Chris. There's also the Financial Wellbeing book has its own Twitter account called Fin Wellbeing. Ovationfinance.co.uk is our website. Financialwell-being is that website, and podcasts are available on the website and your usual downloadable places.
Nice.
They literally went out today, actually, a really good fun one with a comedian who's also a mod, called The Modcast.
Nice.
How's that?
Nice, I like it. Awesome. So all the links will be in the show notes that Chris has just mentioned. Thank you so much for sharing your wisdom and advice today on the Unstoppable Podcast. It's been a real pleasure to meet you and to finally get a male perspective on money today. So thank you very much for helping us out today on the Money Mindset series on the Unstoppable Podcast.
Thank you for having me. It's been fun.
Thank you to Chris for sharing his amazing insights and perspectives today. I really like the piece around defining what it is that you truly want and then building a financial map around those wants to be able to go ahead and achieve those things. And in terms of wants, I talked a little bit about my perspective on wants and needs in the previous episode on creating financial transformation. You see, to me, many people, what I see is that many people have negative associations to creating wealth due to the money beliefs that they inherit from their upbringing. Yet it's my belief that if we can achieve more, then we should, providing, of course, that we have a clear purpose for doing so and a noble purpose at that. It's often said that we don't need a lot to take care of the essentials of living in terms of financial resources. But to me, again, this is a limited view. Because when we expand our view to take note of the difference that wealth can make, not only to your own life, but to your inner circle, your family, your friends, your loved ones, your community, your country, your continent, and the cosmos beyond that, if you want to, that is. And if you don't want to, then, you know, that's fine. But if you do want to, then I believe that it's a very positive thing to want to create more wealth. And the way I look at it is, if you could expand your health, should you? If you could expand your relationships, should you? If you could expand your skills, should you? Therefore, if you could expand your wealth, should you? To me, the answer is yes. And if you have noble desires for more, then I say go for it. But remember, it's extremely important to be grateful for what you already have. Otherwise, you'll never appreciate the blessings that you look to create in the future. So gratitude to me is a massive, massive thing when it comes to money mindset, being really appreciative of what everything that you already have. And if you don't appreciate what you already have, how can you expect there to be more to come? That's the final message for me today. Remember to come and join me in the November 30-day financial sprint over at danjgregory.com/November sprint. That's danjgregory.com/November sprint. And please do share this podcast with others, especially this Money Mindset series. I know it's out there making a difference. And if you'd kindly leave a review on iTunes or your favorite podcast platform, that really will make a difference. So last thing for me, I'll be back on Monday for another solo round. Until next time, go out there, unleash your greatness, build your empire, and make your impact, living your ultimate life. You are unstoppable.